Hey everyone, welcome to the Tribe Culture Life podcast, where our stories and our lives matter. I'm your host, Brittany Montgomery, and I invite you to listen in a few times a month as I chat about issues that we as members of the Black and POC communities face every day. I'll be sharing stories and perspectives that matter to you, from raising children to relationships, entrepreneurship, and traveling, and all aspects in between. If any of those topics interest you, you are definitely my tribe, and you are definitely in the right place. All right, guys, welcome back to the Tribe Culture Life podcast. Today, I am chatting with Dr. Sunjata, kind of just about a little bit about everything. I was really interested in your thoughts on unschooling. I saw that you kind of talk a little bit about that on your website, and I'm really fascinated with that concept. But we're going to get into that. First of all, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So first of all, I love your name. I was just kind of curious, what is the cultural significance behind that? And what was the inspiration for changing your name?
So the cultural significance and background is that Sunjata is Mandinka. Mm-hmm. And I chose the name after Sunjata, who was the first emperor of Mali, and his story in terms of how he rose to power and the resilience, and someone who was born with physical disabilities and his family outcasted, and then eventually as he grew and matured and gained strength, he became a leader where he was, and then his original peoples, the Mandinka people, came and asked him to help them overthrow a tyrant ruler. And he did that. He led them to doing that. And he became the first emperor of the kingdom of Mali. And for those who have heard of Mansa Musa, mm-hmm. Sunjata was the great uncle of Mansa Musa. And Mansa Musa is known as the wealthiest person to ever live. And he, was also at some point the ruler of Mali. So mm-hmm. The reason why I chose the name was because I had put on Facebook that I was thinking about changing my name. And a friend of mine, he just threw it out there as an option. Mm-hmm. And this was probably a whole year before I actually made the change. And then when I started, I just kind of filed it away. And then I learned the story of it all. And Sunjata also, it means sun lion in Mandinka. And right. I'm a Leo, so I appreciated that. And of course, I appreciate everything the sun represents. So it was a fit there. It started with an S, like my given name. Mm-hmm. And what I did was, initially I chose Sunjata, the way my first name is spelled. Because that's the, I'm sorry, and then the way that the last name is spelled is like the Mandinka pronunciation. So gotcha. Even though it looks like Sundiata, and a lot of people actually go, that have that name, go by Sundiata, mm-hmm. and Mandinka is pronounced Sunjata. So gotcha. I took on the Mandinka pronunciation of Sunjata, and then I literally just took on the first name initially. Mm-hmm. And I used the pronunciation spelling just so people could know how to say it, mm-hmm. on social media. Mm-hmm. And I kind of had it the way you see it now. And I was going by Dr. Sunjata for a while. And then I just decided, you know what? I'm just going to keep it the way it is. And I just chose to take on the pronunciation spelling as the last name several months later.
Got you. That is so cool. I loved that. That was like one of the first things that stood out to me when I reached out to you. And I did a little bit of research the other day, but there's a lot of kind of like conflicting information online because, of course, Google. So, yeah, so I really appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us on that. That's really cool. And I love that you wanted to kind of stay true to the original pronunciation. That's awesome.
Yeah, and just to give you and your listeners a little more context, yeah. As to even what motivated it, I was at the time I had a podcast called Race Haven, Solutions Focused Dialogue, mm-hmm. about race relations in America, and During that season, I was doing a lot of research about just race relations in general, and my consciousness and awareness about the various factors, variables, et cetera, behind, you know, systemic racism, behind, you know, the transatlantic slave trade and et cetera, was just, you know, on my mind. And one of the things that I decided I wanted to do as I gained that level of awareness was I wanted to distance myself from the name of a slave owner.
Right.
Because my given name, my given last name was the last name given to my family by a slave owner. And I no longer wanted to have that attached to me. So that was the original inspiration behind me even thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then my first name, given name is Scott. And my dad named my older brother Nnamdi in the early 70s, you know, coming off of the whole Black Power movement and everything. And,
right.
You know, my dad, as a young man, he was into that, and he wanted to give his son an African name. Well, mm-hmm. He got a lot of pushback, and, you know, family members felt like he would make his child's life harder by giving him an African name in America. So he named his second son 6 years later, which was me, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
So I also wanted to push back against the forces of whiteness, the forces of systemic racism, white supremacy that says that, you know, people of African descent have to, quote unquote, blend in and assimilate in order to be successful. And
right.
I wanted to push back against that as well. So that was the motivation behind me changing my name.
I love that. And you speak on such a powerful point. I think we honestly still deal with that. I hear that from like a lot of moms and dads, you know, when they're getting ready to name their kids, there's always the thought, oh, well, I don't want to name them something crazy. I don't want to make it hard to get a job or anything like that. And I think it's really sad that we still have to think like that, you know, to feel like we have to, like you said, have to assimilate to kind of like get ahead or be successful or be accepted. So I love that you know, your name is, I feel like, also a form of like protest, you know, just kind of doing your own thing. I love that. That's pretty cool. So on your website, you refer to yourself as an anti-oppression activist, an unschooling organizer, and an authentic dialogue facilitator, among other things. So clearly you are a man of many talents. You wear a lot of hats. So tell us a little bit about what kind of just everything that you do, what you're all about.
Sure. So, you know, I've really just been on this journey towards living and walking out my purpose. As a young man in my college years, in my 20s, early 20s, I felt a calling on my life.
Mm-hmm.
I began to look around and notice and have like a heightened awareness about the social ills that I grew up under in inner city West Philly. And when I went away to college and when I would return back to Philly, my lens changed. I was able to see things in a way that I hadn't seen them before. And for whatever reason, I just felt like this calling that I had to do something about it. And what it was at that time that I was seeing was poverty, violence, hopelessness, you know, amongst people who I felt were talented and gifted, mm-hmm. and, you know, had every right and ability and skill that is necessary to live healthy and whole lives. And I wanted to understand why that wasn't happening.
Yeah.
Why so many people were slipping through the cracks. You know, why was it that I was, you know, kind of on this trajectory towards success in life, but some of my friends who I grew up with, who were just as talented, just as gifted, just as bright, were slipping through the cracks and struggling and, you know, et cetera, and going to jail and getting involved in, you know, drugs and all these various things, and some people being killed, et cetera. And, mm-hmm. You know, at that point, I just thought it was like poverty, like whatever it is that causes poverty is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to spend my life doing something about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, I set out on this journey to do that. And I thought that I had to become this like wealthy businessman so I could have money to impact change. That mm-hmm. was my mindset in my early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually set out to do that. And I got into the business world and I you know, pursued my journey towards being a millionaire by 30. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, mm-hmm. I would do Big Brother mentoring things. I would do like summer camps working with children and just rolling my sleeves up and getting involved and also reading and just trying to become more aware and learning things. And ultimately, that journey, it just led me towards asking questions. I was always thinking very deeply and having deep conversations with friends who thought like me and asked similar questions and brainstorming ideas about what can be done. And I eventually went on to start a nonprofit and after school program, eventually became a teacher mm-hmm. several years later. after the housing market crash, I was heavily invested in real estate and investing and still doing my entrepreneurial thing. But when that happened, that pushed me into having to get a job for the first time. About 7 years after I graduated from undergrad. And I decided if I was going to work for anyone, I'm going to work for children. And I became a teacher for the first time. And while I was teaching, that's when I started the nonprofit. I went mm-hmm. back to school. And when I went back to school, I took a class called Thinking in Systems. And I learned about a concept called systems thinking that gave me the language and the tools to be able to understand our social, economic, and political systems to a degree that I hadn't been able to understand them before. Mm-hmm. Basically, everything that I felt like I understood intuitively, all the problems that I felt like I recognized intuitively, I now had language and tools for understanding how to articulate and see them, articulate them, and also see a path towards solutions.
Wow.
And that's when, like I like to say, like night became day when I, mm-hmm. when I took a class on systems thinking. Mm-hmm. And I also, during my doctoral studies, I encountered the concept of authentic dialogue. Authentic dialogue as a communications framework that contrasts debate, which is our society default. Mm-hmm. You know, our society's default is debate where, you know, when we're in debate, we're just trying to win. You know, our goal is to win. Our goal is to one up. Our goal is to prove the other person wrong. And authentic dialogue is the complete opposite. Authentic dialogue is about learning. It's about listening to understand, mm-hmm. and it's about seeking common ground. It's about leveraging conflict and leveraging disagreement to strengthen relationships, not leveraging those things to further, you know, cause a divide, which debate does. Debate highlights differences. Authentic dialogue seeks common ground, and it unites. It brings people together. So here I was, this person who was always passionate about helping people.
Right.
Figuring out a way to make the world a better place. I used to journal and write my thoughts and ideas down for many years about these things. And now I was equipped with two new paradigms, new paradigm for understanding our social, economic, and political systems, and a new paradigm for communicating.
Yeah.
And once you armed me, who was passionate about the things I was passionate about with those things, that's when I took the next step to being the things that you mentioned when you those titles you mentioned. Mm-hmm. It brought me into that space where I began to self-study and read books about those topics, about systems thinking and authentic dialogue, mm-hmm. and ultimately started implementing programs and initiatives fueled by the things I was learning.
Right. Wow. That's actually really, really cool. I'm my mind is kind of blown right now. I think kind of what was the coolest thing about that was that, you know, you did all of this education and all of this learning, you know, really to kind of go out and understand your surroundings and your world a little bit better. I think that a lot of the times, you know, at least from what I've seen, like in some of my circles, the goal is to like go to college so you can get a good job so you can provide, you know, full stop. But you kind of invested in that, not only so that obviously all of the things that go along with that, but also so that you could learn more about, you know, the world and figure out how to help kind of your comrades. So I think that's pretty cool.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes, of course. So, you're a real estate agent. I am too, by the way. So I always like to, it's cool to talk to another realtor. Number one, that also has like a passion project on the side, yeah. You know, you're able to do other things besides just real estate. So how long have you been a realtor?
I've been a licensed real estate agent since 2007.
Nice. And you are sustainability agent. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
Okay. So what exactly does that mean? Enlighten us.
So, basically it was just to rewind, like I got into real estate to be an investor initially and,
okay.
You know, that's, and then like the whole market crash thing, I got involved like right before the market crashed. And, like I said, I went into teaching and then I walked away from teaching in 2012 just because, you know, and I'll get more into this when we get into unschooling, but basically, you know, that the passion, the entrepreneurial mindset, as well as the desire to solve problems, et cetera, drove me away from teaching in public schools. But, when I left, I fell back on real estate. And for the first time I became an agent. I needed to make money. So I said, I'll be an agent. And that's when I started to really become an agent. And it was always, you know, something I did on the side and something I kind of toe dipped, working on my passion projects and, you know, using real estate to sustain me. Mm-hmm. And I kind of went in and out of that over the years as I was working on my passion projects. And I also picked up driving Uber as a way to bring in some guaranteed money in between real estate deals, et cetera, over the years as well. While I was, again, doing all of my passion projects.
Right.
So in 20, let's see, it was in 2018, I believe, 2019, might have been 2019. I had saved up some money and from real estate and decided to focus all my energy in writing a book that I wanted to write called Theory of Indivisibility that just brought together my, you know, my systems thinking, learnings, yes, and alternate dialogue, et cetera. Ultimately, I ended up taking several months off and I began writing and researching. And ultimately, it became a podcast. And I was so passionate about, you know, getting this, my theories out into the world that I decided to put out as a podcast to circumvent the whole publishing process. And I just wanted to get this information out to the world. Right. And I felt such a calling on my life that this is my purpose. I just need to be this person and I need to get these thoughts, these ideas out into the world. This is like my art, it's my calling. So I put real estate down, you know, and I just focused on that, like pretty much all of 20, I keep getting my years messed. I think it was 2018 I did that, 2018 and 2019. And then towards the end of 2019, I realized I need to start making money again. Long story short, I realized I need to start making some money again. And I started to think about, like, you know, it's tough. It was frustrating, just to be candid, you know, with anyone else that may be an artist or an activist or someone who's passion and purpose driven, and trying to line up like your passion and purpose with actually making a living can be really challenging.
For
and
sure.
It was challenging for me. And so I struggled and I grappled with that big time, because a part of my journey turn and the things I was learning and understanding about our social, economic, and political systems, I began to really grow a disdain for capitalism. And I no longer was like driven to build wealth in the ways that I was when I was younger, just because I began to connect the dots between those pursuits and a lot of our social ills. Mm-hmm. So I was very conflicted and struggling with having to go back out into the capitalistic world and make money and pursue, you know, making money, knowing based on the way I understood, you know, sustainability and, you know, how consumption and consumerism and all these various things contributed to poverty and contributed to the environmental challenges that are becoming even more evident day by day and year by year. So ultimately, I was thinking about, like, man, again, needing to make money. I have children, child support, all these things. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what am I going to do? Should I just go back into teaching? I need some steady income at this stage. And I said, ultimately, I decided to bet on myself. And by betting on myself, what I mean by that is I had a job lined up, an opportunity, a sales opportunity. But I turned it down and I decided to pursue this real estate with the angle of being a sustainability agent. And as a sustainability agent, or the sustainability agent is how I market and branded myself, I felt like it would give me the freedom and the flexibility as a real estate agent to continue to pursue and do the work I'm passionate about doing, while also being able to make decent money and still, you know, having autonomy over my time, et cetera. And it also allowed me to implement the parts of my real estate business that would allow me to feel like I'm still in integrity with the person I've evolved to become, with the messages that I've been putting out into the world around, you know, social and environmental sustainability. And basically how I do that is with my sustainability program, I send out a newsletter that includes like eco-friendly living tips and sustainability living tips. I purchase carbon offsets to offset my carbon footprint, all the mileage I put on my vehicle. Every time I pump gas, I have a program through my my bank that allows me to purchase carbon offsets. And for anyone who doesn't know what that is, basically, they're able to calculate our carbon footprint based on like driving mileage and the gas that I put in my vehicle, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then they're able to take money from me and to put towards carbon offset programs, which are programs like reforestation, where they're planting trees mm-hmm. in various parts of the world. So there's like a way to like calculate, you know, that impact and then calculate, well, contributing to reforestation and building more trees. And it's like, I'm doing my part to offset the carbon footprint that I'm putting out into the world. So I purchase carbon offsets for my clients as well when they close on a home with me. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, I partnered with several, and I'm continuing to find more. So if anyone's listening to this in Georgia and you want to partner with me, let me know. But yes. I partner with local grassroots organizations who have missions rooted in social and environmental sustainability. Mm-hmm. And every time someone closes on a home with me, I donate $100 to the organization of their choice from my sustainability partners. And if any of my sustainability partners refer business to me, or anyone in their network refer business to me and I close, I donate anywhere from $500 to $2,000 to that organization. Nice. So basically taking money from, you know, me having to be out here and do the capitalistic thing and funneling it towards, you know, organizations that are also fighting towards or let's say working towards creating, you know, a more sustainable planet and right. more sustainable communities.
That's really cool. I thank you so much for taking us through that journey. It's really cool to listen to kind of your change in thinking. You know, you go from, you know, when you're younger, trying to, you know, build as much wealth as you can, because of course, you know, we're thinking, okay, well, we need money so that we can do the things we want to do, take care of the people that we love. And so you've kind of gone from that to be able to live this amazing, sustainable life. I think that's really neat. I had actually never heard of the carbon offsets, you call it, or they, yeah, very cool. I think that's, you know, everyone tries to like, you know, recycle. You try not to leave the water running if you don't need it. But I think to actually like purchase carbon offsets, that's like really putting your money where your mouth is. So that's pretty cool.
Yes, thank you.
And so, what areas of Atlanta do you service?
I'm all over. Okay. You know, I go wherever, you know, I pick up a client, I'm able to, you know, just work with them wherever they are. So I don't have a particular neighborhood that I focus on. I kind of, I go where the people who want to work with me are.
Cool. That's awesome. That's the great thing about real estate. It is so incredibly mobile, right? Yeah, that's awesome. So unschooling, I was particularly excited to chat with you about that. My kids are actually homeschooled right now. We kind of went back and forth between whether we wanted to do homeschooling. The 4-year-old's the only one that's like technically old enough to be in school, and the 2-year-old is just kind of like along for the ride. But and then of course when COVID hit, I was like, oh no, absolutely not. They'll just be at home. We'll figure it out. So the way I understand it, unschooling is just kind of like a different form of homeschool. So for our listeners who are unfamiliar with the term, can you kind of explain to us how it works?
Sure. So unschooling basically is an educational framework where you follow the child based, and you allow them to learn organically based on their curiosity, their natural curiosities, their natural interests.
Mm-hmm.
That's the basis of it. It goes against the concept that a child is a blank canvas and you open up their brain and you pour knowledge in.
Right.
That's kind of the way our schooling system paradigm operates. And unschooling operates from a totally different paradigm. Unschooling operates from a paradigm that we're born to think and learn. Humans are born to think and learn. So just like, you know, birds are born to fly, fish swim, mm-hmm. people think and learn. It's something natural. It's organic. It's innate. It's not something that you have to force. It's not something that needs coercion. And it's honoring the fact that the natural mechanisms that humans are always thinking and learning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the schooling concept says that you go to school to learn, whereas unschooling recognizes that our brains are literally always constantly thinking, always trying to solve problems, always curious, always wanting to accomplish things. And the process of answering those questions in our brain, or the process of trying to accomplish something that we innately want to accomplish, and the learning that it takes to do that is valuable and it's enough. It mm-hmm. also honors the fact that everyone learns at their own pace. And it gets away from the idea that you can actually fail at learning. Like, it's impossible to fail at something that's innate. You know, I could give a million analogies. I'll just give this last one that I like to share is like, you know, in a school setting, you know, we were taught to measure, you know, learning and put these benchmarks in place to say that, you know, if a person hasn't learned to this degree at this age, you know, then they're deficient in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reality is we all grow and develop at different rates in every way. You mm-hmm. know, that would be like saying that a kid who wasn't the height of, you know, whatever height, let's say 4'5" by the age they were, you know, you choose the age that something's wrong with them. They have a growing deficiency, or, you know, someone's hair grows at a different rate. Someone's, you know, our arms, our hands, our feet, like all these things grow at different rates, and we don't sit around and judge the rate at which it grows. So in my estimation, based on the things I now understand, I feel like it's inhumane to sit around and judge the way someone grows cognitively and not mm-hmm. honoring those same natural processes that are evident in every other way that we grow and evolve as humans.
Yeah. I love that. And yeah, that's pretty cool. I feel like we've kind of already started to kind of move towards that, especially since I started doing research on the term, you know, and then like we started in August and it has gotten just a little tedious with like the lesson plans and today we're learning about the letter A and the color green. So I have tried to kind of implement that, you know, well, what do you have questions about? And so she'll ask, you know, about stuff, you know, like at 6 o'clock in the evening after dinner. And I'm like, well, I don't know. Let's pull up a YouTube video about it. Let's, you know, learn together. So I think that's pretty cool just to kind of nurture what they're excited about, what they want to learn more about, and let them take the lead. That's awesome.
Yeah. And it takes a lot of trust, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of the learning, it doesn't require even prompts. You know, mm-hmm. it's something that if we just sit back and observe our children, we'll see what they're interested in. And when they're ready to ask questions, they'll ask. And, you know, we are conditioned to think that we are always have to be challenging them and asking them questions about, what are you thinking? What do you want to learn? What are you thinking? What do you want to learn? But if we think about how we learn as adults, now that we're liberated to learn on our own accord, we go where our curiosity lies. And sometimes our curiosity gets sparked by things that's going on in our environment, things that's going on in the world, things that's going on in our local community, or things that's going on in our family, things that's going on in our relationships. Like, there's so many prompts that like trigger us spending time and going down the rabbit hole of learning about something in a deep way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's amazing what happens when you allow children to, you know, be able to learn in those natural organic ways from an early age. and what I've learned about young people who've come up that way and how they move through the world as adults, it's pretty fascinating. But it definitely takes a lot of trust, and it takes a lot of unlearning as adults, because we've been conditioned to think that learning looks like a certain thing.
Yeah.
And the reality is most of it is something that you don't even see happening, but it's happening.
Right. I love that. And I also love how candid you were on your website. I was reading the other night your letter to your daughter, where you were very open and honest about some of the mistakes that you made kind of, you know, going along on this like conscious parenting journey with your children. Do you feel like conscious, or I've heard it called positive parenting, gentle parenting, I feel like it's all under the same umbrella. But do you feel like that kind of goes hand in hand with the unschooling concept?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I learned about both of them around the same time.
And, gotcha.
And they both were life altering. So yes, just because again, it's like, it's rooted in, for me, they are both a part of my anti-oppression work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's relinquishing the paradigm that says that parents have to have power over and control of young people, of their children. And it's about a paradigm about being in relationship with children, mm-hmm. and modeling the behaviors and modeling the respect that and the communication and the skills and all the various things. It's about modeling those things and not trying to raise a child through domination and control and wielding power over. So yeah, they very much so go hand in hand.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you brought up that's, you know, a part of your anti-oppression work. I think especially as Black parents, you know, raising our kids to like take up space and speak up for themselves and ask all the questions and be curious about all the things and, you know, just kind of learn to trust themselves. I feel like that is our own kind of unique form of protest. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Learning to set boundaries.
Yeah.
You know, learn. This is so important. Learning to be able to, like you say, advocate for yourself, set boundaries. And, you know, one of the most powerful things I say that parents can do is honoring their child's no. You know, honoring their child's no, and so that their child can grow up understanding that they do have power, they do have agency, and that they do deserve respect just like anyone else.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, we came up, and previous generations came up in an era where it was like, if anything that any adult says is like, is gold and it needs to be honored, and you know, all adults are always right. And that's just not the case.
No.
It's just not the case.
Yeah.
And so many children over the years were able to be manipulated, taken advantage of, abused physically, emotionally, sexually abused, et cetera, because mm-hmm. they didn't feel confident in their agency. They didn't feel confident in being able to say no, and that no should be honored and respected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so as a parent, I know that my children, if someone tries to manipulate them or push past their boundaries, like that won't feel comfortable for them. They'll raise a red flag. They'll push back. They'll fight back instead of just feeling like they are supposed to honor and go with anything that any adult says, even an adult that doesn't have their best interests in mind.
Yeah. I'm nodding my head. You can't see, but I'm like emphatically nodding. I love that you brought that up. I feel like before we started having kids, that was my biggest thing. And I did not want, you know, to set them up to be like, you know, victims, or to feel like it's just like all adults are automatically correct just by nature of being adults, because we know that's not true. So, you know, if you have an issue, like stand up for yourself. And then if I need to get involved, then, you know, so be it. But then like once you have kids, and then they're expressing all these feelings and their thoughts. Like it's funny because it looks very different, you know, when they're here. The other day, my 4-year-old, I asked her to do something and she was like, "Mommy, please don't ask me to do that when I'm trying to watch TV," or something she said. My husband was like, "Are you going to let her get away with that?" And I'm like, "Well, I mean, I didn't view it as a bad thing. I felt like you're standing up for yourself. You're setting a boundary. Like, how irritated would you be if I'm, you know, you're trying to watch a show and somebody's like, 'Hey, but I need you to go do so and so and so.'" So I always tell them, like, it starts with us. You can't expect to raise kids that are going to be, that don't understand, or that understand that no is like a full sentence. You can't expect to raise kids like that. And then when they tell you no, it's a problem. So
exactly. It's not easy, you know. It's not easy, you know, because again, our conditioning says that children aren't supposed to be treated as equals.
Mm-hmm.
But if you approach that conversation in the same way you would if your husband said that to you, or a peer, or a friend, you know, just if someone else stated the same thing, and you think, okay, how would I handle that? How do I feel about it? One,
mm-hmm.
and then how will I handle it? And you know, so it's something where it's a process. You know, I can say all these things, but you know, it's something I'm constantly working on. Something I'm constantly, you know, getting better at. I feel like I'm at a really, really good place with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I've been doing it for so long,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't always easy. It is a process. I did mess up a lot. And when I mess up, I apologize. And then to this day, if I do mess up going forward, I will apologize and we'll talk it out and, you know, just continue to learn. But even just being present and aware and conscious of it enough to, you know, apologize when I do overstep, et cetera, is an improvement, you know, towards in terms of how I was raised.
Absolutely. And now, how old are your children?
My daughter is 12 and my son is 8.
Got you. And how have they kind of handled, were they unschooled from the very beginning, or did they start out in traditional school and then you guys transitioned?
So my daughter, she started out in Montessori school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So like right from the very beginning, they were in non-conventional schooling.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she's been in Montessori school. Then we had a period where when I started my program that I started for unschooling, they were with me. But that was right around a time where I was going through a separation and divorce. And
mm-hmm.
Once the divorce happened, my co-parent decided to put them back into their Montessori school
mm-hmm.
Instead of being a part of my program
mm-hmm.
just because of just the fallout from, you know, our separation.
Gotcha.
It was really hurtful.
Right.
But you know, she didn't buy in to unschooling as much in the ways that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And so she, you know, and also I know she didn't, well, I'll say that. I think it boils down to that. She wasn't as bought in. She kind of
gotcha.
Was following my lead in it
mm-hmm.
all along the way. I think she understood it, but once the separation and everything happened, she just felt like, you know, putting them back into the school was the best thing to do. So yeah.
Gotcha. Understood. Yeah. And that's a good point too. It's definitely something that, you know, it's important to kind of have that buy-in from both of the parents and the cooperation so that everybody's on the same page. So thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. And so I'm curious, what is your best piece of advice for anyone? Because I know you've spoken a lot about it on your site and you've given talks about it. What is your best piece of advice, do you think, for parents that are considering this path?
My best piece of advice would be to go through the deschooling process and be patient with yourself and have grace and surround yourself with you know, you got to learn. You have to read books, listen to podcasts, join Facebook groups, et cetera, around conscious parenting.
Right.
Because are we talking conscious parenting or unschooling or both?
Let's go with both. I feel like they're so closely intertwined. Like the more that we talk about them, they really do go hand in hand. So yeah, let's go with both.
Yeah. And everything I said applies to both. So whether someone's listening and they're more interested in one or the other, it applies to both. You know,
right.
you have to, it's easy to fall back into our cultural defaults
mm-hmm.
And norms. So in order to continue to grow, you have to unlearn. You know, and a part of the unlearning is like learning new things and immersing yourself into those resources, podcasts, books, and groups that I mentioned. Like a group that I love for conscious parenting is called Conscious Parenting for the Culture.
Yes.
On Facebook. Such a great group.
Yeah, we'll drop that link in the discussion box. It's called show notes. We'll drop that link in the show notes. But yes, that is, I'm pretty sure that's where I first saw your name. And I was like, oh yeah, he sounds like he'd be a really cool person to talk to. I love that group. That's it. That has, that was actually one of the first groups that I found online when, I kind of realized, you know, what we're doing is not really working. So we need to kind of find another way. So it's been really, really helpful.
Awesome. Yeah. And another, resources I have to drop is The Conscious Parent by Dr. Shefali.
Okay.
Amazing book. It was the first book that got me on, that got me going down the rabbit hole on conscious parenting.
Mm-hmm.
When I found it, totally changed my entire paradigm on just life in general.
Mm-hmm.
and there's a podcast called Fear of the Free Child by Akilah S. Richards, and she has a book on unschooling that she just released called called Raising Free People. And
okay.
If you just, anyone on social media, just put in hashtag Raising Free People and you'll find, you know, Akilah's work. And also her website is raisingfreepeople.com. And I mean, this a valuable, valuable resource for both unschooling and conscious parenting.
That's awesome. Yeah, we need all of the resources. I think that was one of my kind of, I don't want to say biggest mistakes, but one of the ways that I had to shift my thinking, because with anything else, I kind of like, I'm just like, give me the cliffs notes, give me like the summary and let me just like move on and figure it out. But I have found that conscious parenting is not like that. Like you, you need to read and study and, you know, kind of figure things out. It is, it's definitely like an ongoing journey for sure. Yeah. And so you do have a virtual seminar called No More Arguments, How to Resolve Conflict in a Peaceful Way. And I think by the time this airs, it might be over because I think the last day was the 29th. But will you be bringing that back?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
I took a break because I went on a vacation and then I got sick upon my return. But
mm-hmm.
I'll start doing it again on Thursdays at lunch.
Oh, cool.
At noon Eastern time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people can register through my website and actually find like everything I talked about, all these resources, et cetera. I have a resources page on my website that has links to a lot of the things that you're hearing me talk about.
Awesome.
But yeah, you can through my website, drsunjata.com, you'll find links to my Authentic Dialogue website and my real estate website and my unschooling resources and everything that I am and everything that I'm speaking of, you'll find there. But yeah, I will be doing those again.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also, you know, workshops and seminars that I give for groups and organizations. I do mediation for couples,
mm-hmm.
you know, or friends or whoever as well. So yes, I am still in that work.
I think that's really cool. I know you talk a lot about like authentic dialogue and peaceful resolution. And it seems to me that that's basically just like conscious parenting, but it's like conscious adulting, you know, just extending that concept to the people, you know, that you come across in your everyday life. And I think we could all use a little bit of help in that arena. So that's really cool.
Absolutely. It's all interconnected. Like everything that I do, I see it as like one and the same in terms of me just kind of walking out my purpose and trying to be a catalyst for helping us to transition to more to a more sustainable paradigm socially, economically, and politically.
Right. That's really cool. That's awesome. So I know you mentioned your website, which is, you said drsunjata.com.
Yeah, drsunjata.com.
Perfect. So we're going to drop that link in the show notes, definitely. And how else can we connect with you? Are you on like Instagram or Facebook or anything like that?
Yes. Same. Drsunjata.
Perfect.
At drsunjata. So just like, and Sunjata as my first name. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you search for at dr, let me see, is it a dot in there on Instagram? It might be dr dot on Instagram. Let's see here. Yeah, it's dr.sunjata on IG. So yeah, that's
perfect.
That's how you'll find me.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much. I think that's all I have. So thank you again, and we'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, y'all. Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you're new here, join our tribe and hit that subscribe button. And be sure to come and find me on Instagram at itsbrittany24 and tell me what you thought of this week's episode. I value your opinions and your feedback, so feel free to leave a comment or shoot me a DM and let me know your thoughts. Until next time.